Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we are back on a Thursday.
Happy Thursday, John.
Happy Thursday indeed. To continue our conversation, once again, left off by Christopher Walken's
canyons.
Giant spacing between words. We left off. We're talking about minute 133 through 134 today.
That's correct.
And we left off yesterday with your uninhabited south.
And I think it bears noting that uninhabited should be in air quotes.
Yeah.
I wish that he would have done that. That would have been really
your
funny.
Uninhabited. Yeah. Like south.
He put some emphasis on it, sure, but I would just to like twist that knife a little bit deeper. I wish he would have actually done air quotes on screen. That would have been really funny.
Exhibits evidence of human activity.
Yes.
And then, as we talked about yesterday, Vladimir is panicking.
Yeah.
He's on his knees, kind of, you know, not, I wouldn't say groveling at this point, but he's
good,
getting there.
It's a good pre-grovel.
Yeah. I wasn't aware of this. I swear to you, I wasn't aware of any of this.
And Raban and Fade are looking at each other like, huh? What?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Well, that, and they're also completely caught off guard by the approaching Sardaukar guard that we talked about yesterday, who then immediately slices Vladimir's respirator tubes, and we see them, you know, begin to rise toward the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Sardaukar just takes no break and just bashes Vladimir's
suspensor field.
His Holtzman suspensor. And there's a good bit of sparks and everything that go off.
Uh-huh.
Beautiful. But one thing, I don't know if you noticed this, as he's bashing Vladimir's suspensor field, both Fade and Rabin like jump up and away. They're like,
right,
we don't want fucking anything to do with this.
Yeah.
This is not our fight to get into.
So I did note that. Fade stands up, and I think this is just instinct for him. He almost looks like he's looking for an angle to fight. Like he's very much on the defensive.
Yeah, no, he's ready.
Yeah.
But
contrast that with Raban, who is just like, ah,
yeah.
Like he looks and he's just like mouth open, astonished.
He's looking to run.
Yes.
Yeah.
So some very subtle, good acting between the two of them, really embodying their characters.
After being struck in the back, my notes just say that Vladimir collapses under his own girth and there's a loud thud as he just like smacks the ground.
Yeah. And Irulan's looking over this just cold as ever.
Oh,
no emotion.
The like almost knight looking face piece that she's wearing with her hood. It's so cold and I love it so much.
Yeah, it really is.
We cut back to Vladimir from a camera angle of looking down from up on the stairs, and he's like clearly fucked up and he's like looking up at Shaddam.
Yeah.
And we just hear, Mudeeb is alive. I must find him.
Well, before we hear that, I think there's a scene in here, a very quick cut to Fade. And he looks down at the Baron and kind of cocks his head a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think this is so telling of a scene. I don't think he's that upset at all. About
Fade?
Yeah. No,
oh, no, absolutely
Fade
not.
Fade does not give two shits.
No, about, Fade's like, oh shit, dude, I guess I'm Baron now.
Yeah, no, he's like, this is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
He is immediately switching sides, you know, switching his allegiance over to the Emperor. I think, and I know that we see that later in the, like in the movie, but I think this is the moment where it happens.
Yeah. No, Fade recognizes his uncle is dead at this point.
Yeah.
Whether it's immediate or very, very soon.
Mm-hmm.
Vladimir's not making his way out of this one alive.
No.
So it's his time to be Baron.
Yep.
And this is one of the moments that I feel a little bummed that we didn't get more of the like power struggle dynamic between Vladimir and Fade that we get mm-hmm. in the book.
Yeah.
But I understand that the movie, like, it was probably shot. It was almost certainly shot and then, you know, cut for time.
Yeah. It's one of those things like where it would have been really nice to see it on screen.
Yeah.
But it's also something that you could pick up implicitly as just as you're watching the movie. So unfortunately, one of those things that is easily cut for time.
Yeah. There are other things that I would have much preferred be in this movie.
Sure. So. Sure. And after Shaddam says Mardib is alive, I must find him, we see a blade come down to Vladimir's neck.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's not looking too good.
It's not.
For old Vlad here.
Not a good time.
No.
And then the rest of our minute is also in silence. Well, mm-hmm. kind of. I mean, we have the sounds of the storm and we have, you know, desert sounds and everything. But we are outside. We are amongst the Sardaukar. Mm-hmm. Who are all standing in formation. It must be hot as fuck in those suits.
Yeah, and they're in full suits.
Yeah, full suit, full helmet, just yeah. out there. And
flags are flying in the wind.
Flags are flying in the wind. Everyone's just kind of out there standing. They're looking up at the ridge, looking up at the storm. No. And Zach, I have an update for you. Earlier this week, we talked about the troop transport ships and their mm-hmm. like super cool design.
Yeah.
And at the time we had 13 troop transport ships.
Okay.
There are now 22 troop transport ships that are on the ground.
That's
9 more.
That's 9 more.
Yeah. So even more troops are out in formation.
Man. Now I wanted to talk about the flags for a second.
Okay.
And this is really I guess pretty much my book notes for this episode.
Okay.
I mean Frank Herbert, make a really big point to talk a lot about the flags.
Okay.
So, and I'm talking like at least 2 or 3 paragraphs worth of dialogue between Paul, Gurney, and Stilgar about the flags that are flying on the Emperor's cohort.
Sure.
So in the book at this point, it is just the Emperor that has landed on the surface and his cohort, like I said, but there are all of the great houses are already amassed in space.
And that's one of the differences is the great houses have only up until now just been notified.
Right.
So they're not in orbit just yet.
Right. The Spacing Guild obviously is up there as well.
Sure.
And they are preventing anyone else from landing because they do not want any, you know, one family to come in and just like, you know, interject themselves and like take control.
Sure.
Because Spacing Guild, as we all know, is only really concerned about the spice production. They don't give a shit who runs the planet.
Yeah.
Now the Emperor, and this is all coming from Paul and Gurney's like dialogue in the book. The Emperor had a choice. He could fly the Imperial flag to remain, you know, somewhat impartial, but still kind of self-aggrandizing.
Sure.
He could fly the Harkonnen flag to say that he, you know, stood with the Harkonnens and, you know, who currently have control over the planet. Or he could do a third thing, which is what he does. And he flies the Chome flag, which is a very pointed message to all of the other great houses around that the Emperor is taking pretty much the same attitude that the Spacing Guild is taking. And I don't give a shit who runs this planet.
Yeah.
I am here because this is an economic benefit. And without the resources in this, this planet, we are fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And this skirmish is really fucking inconvenient.
It's a big fucking waste of everyone's time.
Right. So I think when I saw the Carino flags flying over the Sardaukar like officers and soldiers. Mm-hmm. I was like, sure, whatever. That makes sense for the movie.
I don't know if these are Carino flags or Sardaukar flags, because all of this, this iconography that we've seen up to this point, and there's nothing about the flags in Art and Soul, I looked, but all this iconography that we saw up to this point seemed to indicate Sardaukar rather than Carino.
Okay.
Though we don't have any Carino iconography really to go off of either.
And I can't remember Prophecy. Do they ever give a sigil in Prophecy?
I don't remember.
I can't remember. Okay. Sardaukar/Carino. I'm going to use them interchangeably.
Sure.
But when I saw that sigil being flown over the troops, I was like, okay, fine. Sure. I get the points. They're not going to get into Chome. Chome has not even been mentioned since the very beginning of the series. The very beginning of movie one, pretty much. There's no reason for
Chome's not even mentioned.
Is it not? I thought they at least name dropped Chome.
I don't think they did.
Yeesh. Well, if they didn't, boo on them. If they did, then that's the last time it was mentioned.
Yeah.
There's no way that they would have played that subtlety into the movie. No, absolutely no shot.
No.
But it's a fun one.
it would be a cool, hey nerds, we see you kind of thing. But
yeah. No, there's no way that they are going to do that. But I did want to at least talk about it here, because that is a very explicit time where we're seeing the Emperor is taking a side, and the side is to the economy, pretty much. Yeah. You know, it does not matter who is contributing to the economy as long as the economy is booming, baby. So that's
a real Reaganite.
Well, I mean, when Herbert was writing this in the 60s, and that was maybe not at the height of the 80s Reaganomics, but it was definitely an undercurrent that was happening then.
No, it wasn't.
You don't think that the...
Absolutely not.
The conservative economic policies were not alive and well in the 60s?
The conservative economic policies
were
alive. They were not well, because you had JFK
I'm talking about the undercurrent here. I'm not saying that they were at the height that they were at in the 80s. I'm saying that they were still there.
The foundations were being laid for what would eventually become the Nixon president. I almost said pregnancy. The Nixon presidency and the economic systems that Nixon would want to impose. But no, I mean, look, I'm not an economist, as very clearly outlined in our conversation with Chome director, which, by the way, go listen to that summer school episode.
I think if Frank was going to be writing about a topical thing, this would have been a good flag for that I say that with irony there. This would have been a good, social notion to draw attention to.
I don't know enough about this to have more things to say definitively.
Fair enough. I'm about at the end of my, my knowledge as well.
So, but I'm going to defer to other people with more knowledge on this one.
If I'm wrong, tell me, please. But this is what I think was the intention behind Frank Herbert's writing. I could be wrong.
And just be reading way too much into it.
Oh, you think the people who do a minute-by-minute analysis of the Dune movies are reading too much into it?
Nah.
That couldn't be us.
Anyways, we're not ending the minute on the Sardaukar, though.
No,
because we still have a solid 16 seconds, I counted them, of some good old thumping. Not only are we thumping, we're thumping all over the place.
We have coordinated thumping.
We have coordinated but also syncopated thumping.
Oh, yes.
There are thumpers all over the place.
I counted five.
I counted... it was one of those situations of is this just kind of re-angled or whatever? Five was the safe number.
I initially counted six, but I realized that was just a little speck on my monitor.
Yeah. So There's at least five, probably more, but there's some a thumping going on. And we end our minute with a different.
If this dune's a thumping, don't come a dumping. I don't know. Stilgar's kind of squatting in the next scene. So,
well, I was going to say we end our scene with a different army, and this time being led by Stilgar.
Yes,
who, as we know, is coming in from the west,
mm-hmm.
With the distraction force, as it were. He's doing his best Slav squat on the sand. He's got a fistful of sand that he's letting just kind of like fly off in the wind. And behind him, a different flag. We have an Atreides flag that we have seen before.
Yes, we do.
In the prescient visions that Paul had inside of the still tent when he had his first like mega dose of spice. Well, sorry, his second mega dose of spice.
Right.
And we gone are the emerald green and silver of the Atreides eagle of the past. And this army bears the colors of the Atreides eagle in the tones of the desert, the tans, the browns.
Got a nice desert tan.
Yeah.
I love
a good
desert tan.
And the thing about Arrakis is that the worm always comes.
Worm always comes. Now, my only other note for this minute was, did you notice how well the thumper sound blended and transitioned into the drum beat music that we get while we're like at the very end of this minute?
Well, yes, I did.
Oh God, it was so good. I had to listen to it at least twice. Yep. So wonderful.
I love when sound effects and music scores work together like that.
Oh yeah. When the diegetic fades from being diegetic to whatever the opposite of diegetic is. yeah, it was wonderful. This is Thumper Central.
Yeah.
In the last couple of seconds here.
Wonderful. I'm sure we'll eventually get some worm.
Show worm. Show worm on Maine.
Show worm, show hole.
Worm on Maine.
but that's it for minute 133 through 134.
Yeah, yeah, that's no more book notes for me.
Guess we'll have to come back and wrap this week up tomorrow then.
Let's do that.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Cool. As always, the Dune Minute is online though, and you can find us on Blue Sky. We are at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com to get in touch with us the old fashioned way. We'll see you then to wrap this week up on a Friday episode.
All right. See you then.